A lot of people, you know, dip them in a little bit of egg batter first and then pop them on the fryer.
My grandma did them with just flour and fried them. She didn't use an egg wash or anything.
I'd say my favorite way is to roll them in flour and brown them in a skillet with butter.
Everyone says, well, you fry them in butter. And of course, anything fried in butter tastes really nice.
It's a nice addition to salads.
We've also had them with eggs.
I like simplicity.
Mix them with some asparagus.
Drying them and kind of using them to mix into cream sauces.
Olive oil or butter and, like, you know, simple spices over pasta just to really highlight their taste.
Whatever could this versatile and tasty ingredient be? It's Indiana's most surreptitious staple, the morel mushroom. I'm John Kay, Director of Traditional Arts Indiana, and I'm proud to present Second Servings, an original podcast series that explores the food traditions that give flavor to Indiana culture. This week, we leave the kitchen and head to the woods in search of one of Indiana's most cherished and elusive edible mushrooms. That's right, it's morel season. Josephine McRobbie brings us this story.
For some Hoosiers, the rainy days in the spring aren't a drag but a dinner bell, because come April, it's time to get out in nature and forage for morel mushrooms. This tasty fungi is a prized ingredient in local cuisine, just as good deep-fried in egg batter as it is in gourmet French dishes. Brown County State Park interpretive naturalist and ranger Jim Eagleman told us that the morel is used in a wide variety of dishes for a number of reasons.
It's one that's been around a long time. It's throughout the world. Its popularity isn't just limited in North America. So it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Ron Kerner, a fungi fanatic and nature photographer, says that the pastime of morel hunting in Indiana is also tied to regional culture.
Well, I moved down to southern Indiana early 90s and from Hammond, Indiana. And in Hammond, there aren't many woods around. But down here in southern Indiana, there's a springtime ritual of people going out and hunting morel mushrooms. And, you know, somebody introduced me to it, and they're very tasty when you fry them up, and I kind of got hooked on them.
Ron was passionate not only about the taste of these rare treats, but the community and excitement surrounding hunting season.
Springtime comes, and a lot of people go out for morels, and you can talk to most anybody around. And if they're from this area, they'll have a story for you about somebody. Oh, yeah, somebody said they're finding them. Yeah, my cousin found 20 the other day.
But morel culture isn't quite as friendly as it seems. Morel hunters are notoriously secretive about the best locations to look for these forest dwellers. As Steve Russell of the Hoosier Mushroom Society says,
even if you get to know somebody really well, they aren't going to give you their spot. You know, they're even hesitant to tell you a general location about where to go, because, you know, you might stumble up on one of their spots. Kind of like fishing, you know, people never tell their fishing spots either, and so morels are kind of the same way.
In fact, one of the only ways someone can get an in with where to successfully find morels is through the bonds of family.
There's some people that have a long history of mushroom hunting, and those are the guys that are really go out and find a lot of them. That, you know, their grandfather and their father took them out to their special spot. You know, because some of them come up in the same area from year to year.
Some have gone to outlandish lengths to find morels.
I have a book on our shelf that the author has determined that, in talking with some of the old-timers, he always found them in places that soil was disturbed, or there was some kind of maybe an explosion or heavy equipment running by the area. So he rented a jackhammer and went out in the woods and was jackhammering into the soil, hoping that would disturb them to create more morels.
Despite various theories on soil temperatures, tree types that morels grow near, and the day's weather, Ron says it's really pretty simple.
If you don't know any particular spots, you just need to find a tract of woods and maybe get you a walking stick and a bag to put your mushrooms in if you find any, and walk slowly through the woods, staring at the ground. And you can look, you know, probably within a 10-foot area of where you're walking. And if your eyes come across one, you'll see it.
But even if you're out on your lonesome and aren't finding many morels, there's something meditative about this particular style of hunting.
It's a good reason to get outdoors, enjoy the woods. All the springtime flowers are in bloom, and it's just It's just a joy to be outside and collecting free food off the forest floor.
The Morell inspires droves to undertake woodland pilgrimages in search of it. But what exactly is it?
One of the common names for them is sponge mushroom, because they look like a natural sponge. They have pits in ridges, and they're kind of a conical shape, kind of like a witch's hat. Some of them can be black. Some of them can be yellowish or goldish. They're hollow, too. If you split them down the middle and you open them up, they're hollow inside.
These honeycomb-like mushrooms come in mostly yellow and black varieties and vary in size. But don't be fooled. Mushroom hunting is serious business, with many varieties poisonous for human consumption. Even morels have poisonous qualities when ingested raw. And while morels are pretty distinctive in appearance, there is always the risk of imposters.
There's a mushroom called the false morel. It doesn't have the pits that the morels have. It's more a brain-like appearance.
False morels are mildly poisonous, so Ron recommends caution when hunting. Once you do have some morels on your hands, get ready for some good eating. As Ron says,
they're really one of the top five, in the top five, I think, of culinary mushrooms. They're really prized for their edibility.
Jim Eagleman explains that morels are not your average mushroom.
I wouldn't want to compare it to any of the button mushrooms or the portobellas or the shiitakes. I would just say the morel has kind of a natural, organic, nutty taste, and not like other mushrooms. It's got its unique flavor all its own.
The uniqueness of morels led the Brown County State Park to put together a festival based on them. It's now in its fifth year. Jim Eagleman is involved with the festivities.
The idea is we learn a little bit about the mysterious morel, and so the more we can share what we know about the biology of the plant to help people find them and then eat them, the more people appreciate our DNR properties, our state parks.
And yes, it is legal to hunt mushrooms at a state park.
Fruits, nuts, and berries are collected on our state parks in Indiana, and the mushroom is considered a fruiting body, so it's a legal thing to be taken. It's always renewed. It's an ongoing resource, and so we allow people to walk our trails and find the mushrooms.
There are certainly many people at the festival ready and raring to go. Visitors Tracy Schaffner and her husband Bob were excited, despite the rain.
We love the outdoors, and I mean, anything to do outside is great, and the mushrooms, when you're finding mushrooms, it's like an Easter egg hunt for adults. You're just like, there's one, oh, there's one, you know, and it's just really exciting when you're finding them.
The Morel Festival didn't just have a cooking demonstration, lecture, and morel auction to benefit the park. It also housed a crafts fair, including morel-themed sculptures by Doug Ricks, a chainsaw artist.
We come up here for the Mushroom Festival for today to do demonstrations on how to carve mushrooms out of wood.
Doug, from Coons Lake, Indiana, has been whittling and carving wood since he was a kid. He now makes wood sculptures professionally, and it's a family business. At this event, his wife, daughter, and son-in-law all take turns carving. Here he is explaining how he carves the delicate spongy shape of a morel into a log.
We cut the logs. You know, they're all native wood that we get here. Most of them are storm-damaged trees. And then they're on a two-year rotation before we even carve them. We let them dry out a little bit. And then, as you can see, we have stands. We mount them on the stands. And then we go from that point, and whatever it is we're going to carve, we start blocking it out. And then we do the detail. And then the finishing is basically done in our shop, as far as putting the coating and the painting and stuff like that.
When they're not inspiring works of art, morel mushrooms are inspiring a number of dishes.
The effort that you extend to find them is well worth it when you go to pan fry them in butter or a batter or what have you. And it's a nice addition to salads and the natural foraging that people are enjoying now. So it's fun to find them, but it's more fun to eat them.
Steve Russell and many others recommend simplicity when cooking these delicacies, that and the time-honored tradition of deep frying.
For morels in particular, I think the way a lot of people like to cook them is just to fry them up, you know, in a pan with butter. A lot of people, you know, dip them in a little bit of egg batter first and then pop them on the fryer.
But whether you're cooking them in truffle oil or an omelet, hunting them with a jackhammer or just a keen eye, morels are a staple of the culinary life of Indiana. As Jim says,
it's a true Hoosier tradition, and we always say they aren't a true Hoosier unless they've eaten a morel.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Second Servings. We hope that you'll consider checking out IndianaMushrooms.com and HoosierMushrooms.com in order to learn about the many varieties of fungi in Indiana. Thanks to DNN Wood Carvings and Chainsaw Sculptures, we'd like to thank musical contributors Jake Brown and Blue Line and Olivia Smiley and Jeff Guernsey. This production was made possible by funding from the Indiana Humanities and is brought to you by Traditional Arts Indiana, which is dedicated to identifying and documenting Indiana's traditional practices in partnership with Indiana University and the Indiana Arts Commission. We'll see you next time, and until then, pass the plate and pass on a tradition.